interviewing Essie Woods, a member of the WEX, on April 2nd, 2002, for the Michigan Women's Historical Center exhibit A Few Good Women, Women in World War II. So you were in the WEX, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
now it was the WAAC at first.
Okay.
Back in 43 when I enlisted. And then they changed over in about 6 months after I enlisted to the WAC.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So why did you decide to enlist?
Well, I guess I got carried away. I'm originally from Augusta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Camp Garden there, and we had the airfield there. And we did a lot of the three sisters of us, in my family.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a lot of USO work. And then they sent some colored officers around and to enlist women.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess we got patriotic carried away. And we enlisted. And so that's really how it was, just that feeling of wanting to do something.
Mm-hmm. So your sisters enlisted too?
Yeah, in fact, the one of my sisters was in her last year of college, and she went off on the weekend. And when she came back, we had planned to enlist. My older sister just was just 15 months difference in our age. We were like friends.
Mm-hmm.
And when she came on the weekend back home, we had been had planned to do this, and she said, "Oh no, but you're not going to leave me. I'm going too." Youngest of the three, my mother really had to sign her in because she was was a year that she should have been older.
Uh huh.
And the way we all went down to Camp Spirit to take our exam and whatnot, and would you know, I was the only one who didn't pass because I was underweight. And I came back home. My mother was so happy. But I was so sad until, in a month's time, the whole neighborhood, even the grocery store, had me. I had gained 15 pounds. And I went back, and I got in on that second try. They gave me a month to get my weight up.
Oh, okay.
But it was 3 hours, and my mother didn't know what in the world, because most people in those days felt that girls should not. Well, they had a different idea. They thought girls were going in to entertain the fellows.
Mm-hmm.
And society had a problem with that. And my mother was upset because she, thought that would be a mark on our
right
character. But her friends assured her, "Now you raised them right, and they're going to take up the same kind of people they had in civilian life. They will take those kind of people up in, when they get in service."
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of calmed her down.
Yeah. Yeah, that must have been hard, though, all three of her daughters enlisted all at once.
Yeah, she was really upset. My father had passed a few years ago, prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I guess she felt like, because the youngest child was my brother, and he was about 10 or 12. Well, no, he was about 14 years old, I guess, at that time. And, of course, I knew she felt like the whole family,
Yeah, yeah.
But it worked out.
So then, after you enlisted, did you go to basic training?
I went to basic training in Des Moines, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And after my basic training, they sent us down to Des Moines to administrative school. I mean, you were selected according to the how they classified you. And we had the motor pool, we had the cook training, we had the administrative school and whatnot. But I was one of those who went to administrative school.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there for, I guess, about 6 weeks. And then we were sent out on the field. I went to Camp Forest, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, each one of my sisters went different camps. One went in Atterbury, Indiana, and one was in Breckenridge, Kentucky. So we were all in different camps.
Mm-hmm. Did you train together at all, or...?
No, the two of them were in basic training together, but because I was
delayed, oh, that's right.
I was in there by myself.
Okay, so you came in a little bit after them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So kind of, what was your daily routine like in training? Like, what kind of things did you do?
Oh, well, now that was the worst of my experience. I'd never been used to anybody yelling at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't done anything. And it was just, but that's the way they were tough on you.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the clothes didn't fit because they didn't have, they had not been prepared for women.
Now, were you in one of the earliest groups to join?
Yeah, I was back in March of 43.
Okay.
And, of course, we had the old shoes that the men were wearing, big shoes and whatnot that didn't fit. The overcoats were dragging the ground almost.
Oh, no.
It was terrible.
Oh, my goodness.
And then plus being yelled at all the time.
Right.
But that was a part of the training. They were molding you all mm-hmm. the time. And we finally got it into the kind of people that they thought they had were ready to be sent out on the field.
So did you learn, like, basic, like, army regulations, marching, that
yeah,
kind of stuff?
Marching and drilling and getting up early in the morning. and on the, well, in Des Moines, Iowa, it was one of those climates that in the summer, you just might be out on the parade field and a clap of lightning would come. And just the big sun would be shining bright. I never had been in that experience. But those are the things you learn to endure because they didn't stop it. You know, you kept
going. You just kept going.
That was the way it was. And when we got out on the field, when after I went to Camp Forest, I was in a medical unit because they were still undecided what to do with women.
Mm-hmm.
And finally they assigned me to the administrative section of the hospital for taking care of records. And when they decided to deactivate, when they brought the German prisoners in Camp Forest, and that's when they deactivated our company. We were split up and sent all over. And, of course, they had in mind the ones that they had in mind for overseas duty, and we didn't even know it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, my part of my company was sent down to Oglethorpe, Georgia. And when we realized what it was all about, it was preparing us for overseas duty.
Mm-hmm.
And that was tough training, but it was necessary.
Right. So did you volunteer to go overseas, or?
No, I did not. One day I came home from work in Oglethorpe, and the girl said, go over to the office and see whose name is up. Your name is up on the And I said, what? And they said, go over and see. And then there was a list of girls who were selected for overseas. And I said, I didn't sign up for any overseas duty. That hadn't even come into my mind.
Right.
So I went into my commanding officer and I asked her, how did my name get up there? And she said, I selected the girls that I would like to go overseas with me. She was Captain Noel Campbell.
Uh-huh.
And she was a commanding officer, and she was selected to go overseas. And she, in fact, she was second in command of our battalion.
Oh, wow.
When we went overseas. So I said, well, since you selected me, I guess it wouldn't be nice of me to work out because I did volunteer. But I was glad I did, and I was... I thought it was an honor for her to think that much of me.
No, definitely.
Yeah.
So you were in the, was it the 68th, 88th?
688
6PD. Okay.
It was a postal directory.
And where were you stationed overseas?
Well, our first assignment was in Rouen, France. And then from there we went down from, after we sent, well, we, what is happening with the postal directory, you follow the troops.
Mm-hmm.
You're behind troops going up because you're delivering their mail. So you're behind them. As they advance, you come up behind them.
Mm-hmm.
So we were in Rouen. Then we went over to Birmingham, England. And from there, we went to our last station was in Paris, France. That was when things were winding down,
mm-hmm.
and we were closing out.
And what year did you go overseas?
It was in 1945.
Okay.
And it was, I think it was March of 1945.
Okay.
The worst time that you could go over because the weather wasn't too good.
Right, yeah, I've been in England in March, and it's not the best weather that I've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah, and then we had the experience of the U-boats, you know. They were.
Oh, really?
Well, we went over on the Ile de France,
okay.
one of the large boats, and they were transporting our Air Force. It wasn't so much of us they were after, it was those Air Force. But we were on the boat. So we had experience of being chased by those submarines.
Really? Did they ever torpedo you or shoot at you? Or
they tried, but that Ile de France was a fast
boat. Oh, my goodness.
And they outmaneuvered them. But we didn't realize that they, you know, you just, when you, I tell everybody, a war is a terrible thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we should never want to experience it. But you are not aware of your danger when you're involved.
Mm-hmm.
You don't realize how dangerous it is. But we were lucky, you know, just lucky.
Right. So did you ever feel, like, afraid or worried?
No, that's the strange thing about being in danger. You are not afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it is that makes you that way. You are not afraid. And you don't realize how dangerous it was until after it's over.
Which is probably better, maybe.
Never I think it is. I really think it is better. And
mm-hmm.
I think maybe nature prepares us for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So what kind of things did you do when you worked at the mail center?
Well, we had to redirect the mail because the fellows were on the move.
At right.
all times, we had to know where. We had locator cards. We had to know where they were at all times, and the mail was backlogged, and packages and whatnot was,
mm-hmm.
was all, we had to catch up those things.
Mm-hmm.
And, we had money orders posted, but it was just like a regular post office,
yeah. Well,
we had three shifts. We worked 24 hours around the clock.
Oh, wow.
And that's the way we handled it. That's one way how we caught up, too,
mm-hmm.
because it was a three-shift thing that was going.
Right. Where did you live while you were doing that?
Oh, boy, no answer. Living conditions. Well, first in Birmingham, we lived in an old King Edward school that used to be a boys' school.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, it wasn't prepared for women. And the showers were in a different area. If you wanted to take a shower, you had to go way out. And
uh-huh.
Oh, it was terrible.
Oh, no.
And then we didn't have beds. And they had made, I guess the fellows, I don't know who made these makeshift beds. And we didn't have mattresses, so they had strapped the straws into the mattress. Well, you know what the straw did when you were sleeping.
Yeah.
Looking up. And then we didn't have washing facilities like you, but we just made shift of everything we did. We just had to make, you know, makeshift.
Mm-hmm.
The food was good because we had our own people who did our cooking.
Oh,
know?
Well, that's good.
So the food, and they delivered a good food. They did keep us in good food.
Mm-hmm.
But the other conditions was in Rouen, we had those old school, and then in Birmingham, the old school, but in Rouen, we had to take over Old Napoleon Fort that was really hard.
Oh, no.
It was just a cold, damp, two buildings that was made with solid cement or something. No heat, whatever.
Oh, no.
And it was terrible, but our Adams, who was our battalion commander, wanted to keep us together. And the only way she could keep 800 of us together was to take that kind of facility.
Mm-hmm.
But when we went to Paris, it was a different. We were living in style. We were living in hotels there.
Oh, that's nice.
So that was a different thing.
And that was pretty soon after they liberated Paris?
We had taken over Paris,
mm-hmm.
and then they could move us in,
mm-hmm.
and that was when the war was really winding down.
Right.
We were really doing cleanup duty. A lot of girls had been sent home, but we were the last to leave. We were really cleaning up these
mm-hmm.
odds and ends.
Did you have any kind of opportunities for leave or anything like that while you were in the Army, like both
yeah,
in the States or overseas?
I had one leave. What I guess about everybody had about one leave, and I took mine to go to Switzerland.
Oh, nice.
And I really enjoyed that.
That's neat. Did you travel with other people, or?
Well, no. Other Army personnel
mm-hmm.
was on the trains, but they were from different places.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was about 3 from my unit, from my battalion, that was allowed to go at that time. They did not ever let that very many of you go away at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was about 3 of us that went on that trip. And at various times, others went on, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So what was it like being in a majorly male environment in the Army?
Pardon?
What was it like being in a majorly male environment, since most of the people in the Army were men?
Well, that was something that you had to get adjusted to, because men did have a feeling that you should not be there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had to get used to the idea that you were not their favorite.
Mm-hmm.
But now, overseas, I will say that those various battalions who they were over there, they did entertain us and invited us out to dinners at their place.
Mm-hmm.
And they were nice to us after they got used to the ice.
Right.
But it took them a little while too. And then our battalion commander was very protective of us.
Mm-hmm.
And she wanted to be sure that no harm came to us either, you know.
Right.
So it was, but it turned out real nice. The experience was nice.
That's good. So it sounds like you had a pretty close relationship with your commanding officers.
Yes. As I told you, that the second in command was my company commander,
mm-hmm.
and we were very close. And the battalion commander, who was Captain Adams, I mean, Major Adams, sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
And she was, in fact, she passed here last month.
Oh, really?
At 83 years old. And she was a very protective person. She saw that we, and they were really, we admired them because they were so concerned and of all of our needs, and you could always go to them. They were not distant.
Mm-hmm.
We had other offices over each company. We had 4 companies. But you could always go to the head office if you had any, you know,
mm-hmm.
real complaints. They were never distant from you.
Right. That's good. Did you ever encounter any stereotypes about military women? I know you kind of mentioned that your mother was concerned that you were supposed to, you know, take care of the men and that kind of thing. Did you ever encounter any more of those, or...?
Well, just like in civilian life, I mean, they are carrying on about lesbians and all those
people
mm-hmm. now. But I've seen, I worked for the government after getting out of service, and you encountered those people through life.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, of course, I didn't know about them when I was, because my family was very protective. I didn't know about that other side of life.
Right.
I was exposed to it. But you don't have any problem with those people. Strangely enough, now they seem to want to make a stand. But in those days, they didn't want to be bothered with you,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't want you in their company. I always tell them about the joke when my friends played on me. I was always going out when I was in Paris trying to explore.
Right.
When I came in, it was late. I was kind of late for dinner. And the tables were all filled, and I couldn't find my friends, but they were holding a place for me, but they pretended it wasn't a place there, what I was going to do. And these peculiar people who stuck together. They had a space at their table. I said, oh, shucks, I'm hungry. Went over there and sit at their table.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they politely asked me up. They said, I don't think you want to sit here.
Oh, really?
And so I told everybody, no, they didn't intimidate you.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to be bothered with you. They had their own friends, and they stuck together.
Right.
So you're exposed. It's a good training for anybody who's been grown up in a protective environment.
Mm-hmm.
Because you learn all kinds of people from all phases of life.
Yeah.
And you learn to get along with them. And you learn to know how to handle yourself in mm-hmm. their society.
And how old were you when you enlisted?
Oh, I guess I must have been 18.
Okay.
No, I was 20.
20.
I was 20.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you were still pretty young then, too.
Because I was young because I hadn't been exposed
mm-hmm.
to, you know, people in those days were very protective of their children.
Right.
And you didn't... You didn't associate with people who were not from your background.
Mm-hmm.
And it was maybe a mistake. Maybe it was wrong, but that's the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had not been exposed to the other side of life and a lot of things I did not know. And I think it was a very good training, for me in life.
Right. Now, were your units segregated, or...?
Yeah, we
okay.
were segregated. And during World War II, the Army was very segregated.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't happen till the kids in Korea and those conflicts where things were changing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let me see here. I want to talk a little bit more about your uniform. You talked about how when you first got them, they were so ill-fitting and everything. Did they get better? Did they issue you new ones?
When we got out on the field, in fact, in Des Moines, it got better because when we went down to administrative school, they allowed us to buy, the companies were making dress uniforms,
mm-hmm.
and you could purchase them yourself, and we were allowed. So we really became very sharp. we wasn't making any money, but you know what we were doing, buying, we could buy shoes and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really, and then they start issuing nice uniforms.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, they finally got prepared for us. They just wasn't prepared.
Right. was there any regulations about makeup or hairstyle or things like that?
Oh, yes. You definitely could not have it below your... They didn't want it touching your collar.
Okay.
You had to keep it... Well, you know, at those days, I know you were young and don't know about it, but girls used to wear that roll. They roll their hair.
Oh, right. Yeah, I've seen
that. So you can always make that roll higher enough to not touch your collar.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they inspected you, that's what they were inspecting for, to be sure that hair was not touching your collar.
Mm-hmm. So then, how long did you stay overseas?
1 year.
1 year?
Mm-hmm.
And was that, did you come home because the war was ending, or?
It was because it was ending.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So then, what did you do after you returned home?
Well, I was discharged at Fort. We came in on the boat to Camp Kilmer.
Mm-hmm.
Then we were separated and sent down to those who were that part of the country that I came from,
mm-hmm.
Fort Bragg, for a discharge. And my sister, who did not go overseas, two of us went overseas. And
oh, okay.
Now, the one that we met up with her at Fort Bragg. She had been in the hospital there, and I know they kept her there until we got there. I think they wanted to discharge us together.
Oh, that's nice.
So we were discharged together and went home together.
Okay. So you were with one of your sisters, though, the whole time you were overseas?
In a different company. They would not allow us to be
okay.
in one company.
Right.
But we were in different companies, and then finally we went down to Paris, and we were finishing up. They
mm-hmm.
put us in the same company.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So that must have been pretty exciting to be in Paris.
Yes, I enjoyed that. The only thing, I drove my sister and all my friends crazy because I would go out by myself exploring.
Mm-hmm.
And they would be worried to death about me. But I found you're not a stranger any place you go.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't a fluent French person, but I learned to make people understand me. I was broken French, but
right.
I understood where I was coming from. So I didn't have a problem, but I just like to explore those old cathedrals and
mm-hmm.
all those places, and I never felt alone.
Oh, yeah.
But I drove them nuts.
Worrying about you, hey?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Paris is a gorgeous city. That sounds
yes,
really neat.
Is. We went back for a reunion in 83, and things were, it was just so different from what, it just, places changed so fast.
Mm-hmm.
We went back to Rouen and Paris, and we went down to, we went to Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
They were, oh, we just had a lovely time in Birmingham. The mayor of the city and also his staff, they just took us over and just gave us a great time. And then we went through experience. We retraced our steps.
Uh-huh.
That was interesting.
That's really neat, yeah. Mm-hmm. Did many of your company, were they able to come back?
No.
No?
No, it was about, I guess it was, must have been about 12 of
mm-hmm.
them. So, but we didn't get out of the 800 people.
Right. Was there a lot of destruction in Paris when you were there?
Oh, terrible.
Yeah.
Now, Le Havre was the worst place I'd ever seen, and that's when it really hit me. When our boat landed in Le Havre, we were going over to, that's when we were going over to Rouen.
Mm-hmm.
And to see a whole city leveled, like a, just leveled off.
Wow.
It was just heartbreaking, you know. So that really, you know, got to us when we saw that.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And then when the other places was mostly in spots.
Mm-hmm.
And then the people, they seemed to, they're just the little necessities that we'd taken for granted, they didn't have. And they were so grateful if you gave it to them, just our rations, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that because we had to, on my, the table, the group that I was supervising in the mail room, I had a half table of French people and half table when we got to France. The French people worked. And that's when I learned a lot about how they were suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And they would tell you about the circumstances.
Yeah. That's too bad. What was the highest rank that you had while you were?
Oh, I didn't get any any farther than the staff sergeant.
Oh, okay.
Well, now I can't complain. They gave me opportunity to advance. It was my wish.
It was your choice.
I didn't want to be an officer.
Mm-hmm.
That was one thing I did not want to be. Our black officers were having too many problems.
Oh.
And then another thing about it, I'm a firm believer of not abandoned my friends.
Right, yeah.
And I had made steadfast friends. When you make friends in the Army, they're just like a bond. And those were some of the things that I had never aspired to be
mm-hmm.
really anything. They always called me the lazy type. I wasn't trying to be anything. I really didn't want to be the staff sergeant.
Right.
But they said, okay, you go to work. Yes, you get it. So I don't know. Maybe that's the same way in civilian life. They claim that I just said, my husband used to say, you're just plain lazy. I don't know why I didn't aspire to ever, you know, want to be the top of anything.
Right.
But I know they had made me work, you know, because they said, yeah, you're going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And they put me to work. And I feel that I don't refuse because I feel that you shouldn't if you. And I do a lot of volunteer work now, you know, because
mm-hmm.
I know that that isn't right. But I never have been the kind that wanted to initiate doing anything.
Mm-hmm. So did you keep in touch with some of your friends you made then while you were in the service?
Yes, you know, we have, I belong to, when I came to Detroit, I have one friend that passed a couple of months ago. She was with us in the overseas, and well, of course, we were not friends then. We knew each other passing, but we met her here, and we became friends. We joined some of the same veteran groups. And my sister and I, who came to Detroit, we stuck with them. Then there was several other girls in the group that was overseas with them. So we are going pretty fast now. Last month, I think, a couple of months ago in San Solo, we lost 3 World War II veterans.
Oh.
So we see we're all in the 80 bracket.
Right.
That our time is running out.
So how did you end up in Detroit then? Was that shortly after you got out of the Army?
Well, after I came back, I think everybody was, I think after you've been away from home, you want to change. And Augusta is a nice size town, but we were limited to what you either had to go into teaching, or you had to go into, we had an insurance company, a black insurance company there. You either worked there, the Pilgrims Insurance Company. Those are the things that were so limited until we decided, my youngest sister and I, who was overseas together, we decided, let's go to another place. We had an uncle here.
Okay.
Well, we wanted to go to New York, but my mother said, no, you're going where your uncle is. that's why we wind up in Detroit.
Oh, okay.
We would have preferred to go on the East Coast.
right.
But I'm glad we did come here because I've enjoyed Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Detroit's a pretty good town.
In, I think it was February of 46, and we've been,
So how do you feel about your experience overall?
I think it was a very good thing. Very good thing. There were a lot of things that I didn't like, but a lot of things I think the good outweighed the bad. And I think that things have improved. I mean, with the younger generation, they have told me that, you know, that I belong to one black organization, and those girls, as far as rank is concerned, it's just amazing how they have achieved those things that we were not able to achieve because they we were just hindered because of our color, let's face it.
Right.
And but the girls today, I know we went to one reunion, and the girls, they were just bending over backwards to wait on us, older ladies. And at the last day, they had a program with all their ranks. And here was all these majors, lieutenants, colonels, and whatnot that we had been calling by their first name and ordering them around. All the So we said, why didn't you tell us? And they said, no, you all deserved everything we did for you. So I find that now with the girls that I belong to, they still belong to the group, and they are really not carried away with what they have achieved. They have their feet is on the ground, and I tell them, I say, well, keep that where, know where you're going, and don't get above yourself. Remember where you came from. So they're experiencing things that we never experienced.
So they had limits on the ranks you could obtain and things like that? Because they had limits on, like, the rank that you could have and the things that you could do because of your race?
We know why it was that
way.
Right. They would not give us even when our battalion would ask for, things, they would not give it to us.
Right.
And we understood.
But you knew.
But we came from an area that the young people today would not understand. We expected it. It wasn't, we knew, but we knew we had to do the best be the best we could be in order to prove ourselves.
Right.
And that's what we strived for.
And it sounds like people have been doing even more, like, on and on, so.
Yeah, we've come a long way, definitely.
That's great.
The young people have really, and the only thing I tell them to remember where you came from and where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main thing to remember. Don't take it for granted.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So would you serve again if you had the chance to do it again?
Yes, I really value that experience. I think it was an experience in life that you really needed for various reasons. It makes you a better person to understand human beings, and it makes you dedicated to do something for someone else besides yourself. You're supposed to share and think about the people and not yourself and not be so self-centered. I think all those things you learn when you experience that kind of life.
So what do you think about the future of women in the military or women in combat?
Well, now, that's where I have a problem. I don't think, and I know that it's going to be necessary because women might have to defend and be strong.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder, are women prepared under stress and combat? But they say they're doing beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
They say fellows do not complain. They say the women are doing good.
Right.
But I do have a problem with it. I just wonder when they leave little kids to be a part of that dangerous experience.
Mm-hmm.
Is it fair?
Right.
To the child?
Right.
Because to lose a mother is something I think that is detrimental to a child. And that's where I think if you're going to raise a family, I don't think you should. And with some of them, when they go in, they are not married. It happens after they're in.
Right.
But I do have a problem with younger children not being without their mother and the dangers that the mother's exposed to.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Well, that's pretty much all that I have as far as things that I wanted to talk about. But do you have anything else that you would want to add or elaborate on?
No, I don't think there's anything else I could add to it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.